This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the Bloody Disgusting Podcast Network.
No one wanted to talk about it. No one would admit they had seen or heard it.
Boils and ghouls, lock your doors and strap yourselves in. From Los Angeles, California, Bloody Disgusting presents the Boo Crew Podcast. Horror news, commentary, reviews, interviews, and more. With your hosts, Lauren and Trevor Shand and Leone D'Antonio.
I'm Leo.
I'm Lauren.
I'm Trevor, and welcome to your Boo Crew Podcast, episode 412. Happy 2024, y'all.
Woo!
First episode of the new year. Leo, we haven't seen you in a while. How you doing?
Doing okay, man. I'm surviving.
Yeah?
I've been sick, like, one thing after another, man. So, spent the holidays, like, literally in bed.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Well, I
didn't do anything.
It's a familiar story, though. I've been hearing a lot of people getting sick. We had a bunch of that over here, too.
I went from kidney stones to bad reaction to medication to a mild cold.
Jeez.
And back to the medication, yeah.
Merry Christmas to you, huh?
Oh my gosh.
Oof.
God. Wow. I'm so sorry to hear that. But yeah, I don't even think we haven't recorded together or seen each other in a very long time. Probably since the last guest. Was it? Were you here when Scout was here? I don't even remember.
No. Scout.
So was it probably Joe Lynch, right?
Yes, that was probably the last one.
I'm thinking, yeah. That was end of October. Wow, it's been a while. Oh, there's Joe Lynch's episodes like starting to play in the background. I summoned Joe Lynch.
That's funny.
So I wanted to mention, like, last week we had, or last episode, not last week. We skipped another week, I think. We did like a year-end wrap-up, just myself and Lauren. And
oh, yeah, it was fantastic.
Oh, man. Thanks for listening, Leo. Our biggest fan.
Thanks for listening. No, you know, it was fun to hear Tarantine Scarlett, man.
Yeah, right? That was the first time she's
got some good ones.
I was impressed. Yeah, she's doing great. She's been watching so much stuff. She's been really, like, dictating what we watch now.
Yeah, she makes the rules.
And on a separate episode, Lauren, I'm glad that you finally saw Prometheus.
Yes, I'm like,
lots
I was
to talk about there.
So bummed that you weren't there to talk with
me. Hey, he's
me
here now. He's yes. here. I still haven't seen Prometheus, but I'm fine with whatever you guys want to say about it. But.
You know, I want you to see it because it's so good and it's so topical for everything that we've been watching and into and that I've been talking about, which I'm sure we're going to talk about this episode, what we've all seen.
Yeah, well, we're totally going to get to that. I wanted to just reference a couple things that I know, Leo, I could just imagine you listening going, I can't believe you haven't mentioned this in the year-end wrap-up. And in terms of the things we're looking forward to in 2024, one of those things that we never even mentioned was The Strangers.
Oops.
The Strangers Chapter 1 coming back in May.
No, and we did.
Can't wait to see
it. We did talk about that before.
Yeah, we have talked about that in the past. Yeah, but yeah. Leo, do you know anything else about that? It's going to be a trilogy, correct?
It's a trilogy, and I thought they were going to be released in the same year, but it looks like it might be multi-year or maybe two in a year, not sure.
Got it, okay.
But the trilogy is supposed to tell a real complete story, like not just what happened that night, but what happens after the fact.
Oh, so, man, that's great.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah, Strangers and Strangers Prey at Night were some of the best horror films made in decades, I thought. They were really, really good.
Yeah, they're good. They're my favorites.
I'm curious to see like how this next batch, either ramps up or equals to at least what they were able to accomplish in that. I really hope that's the case. And I think we're in good hands as far as that's concerned.
Yeah. And I think the thing makes it so scary is just, it could happen to anyone.
Right. The randomness of it.
Yeah. That's which scares me so much.
Right. We also forgot to mention Maxine.
Ooh, I'm excited for that one.
Yeah. I can't believe we forgot to mention it. There's, I think, maybe because there's no like official release date on that one yet. So maybe it just kind of skipped our overwhelmed minds. And
but I thought you guys covered it very well. You guys did a very thorough.
Oh, thank you. Well, we did our best, but there was a few we missed. Beetlejuice 2 again. I don't think it's kind of TBA as far as the release date, but that's supposed to be coming out. And then Ghostbusters, right?
Yeah.
March 29th. We mentioned Lisa Frankenstein, February 9th. It's the one we're really, really looking forward to. And also a very important one, Richard Elfman's Bloody Bridget.
Yes.
Which has been making the rounds, sort of touring independently and in festivals all over the place. And we're really looking forward to everybody being able to see that one, hopefully this year. This should be the year.
Yeah, it's so crazy.
It's wild.
So fun.
And not just because Lauren and my son Thayer are in it.
Yes.
That's right.
Which makes you have to see it.
Yeah, exactly.
You listening have to see it.
Required viewing. But it is just, I don't know, the creativity of Richard and Anastasia Elfman, his lovely wife, combined is unlike anything you've ever experienced. It's almost like mainlining creativity to watch anything they do and to hear them speak. And they're completely doing these things almost with their own band of friends and people they can get together. Because I think their ideas are so wild that I wonder if a lot of people go, I don't even know how we're going to make that happen. And the magic of Richard and Anastasia is they figure out how to make the impossible happen. And they do it in such wild, creative, and original ways that it is just a joy to experience anything they do on the screen. And it is so fun to be able to help support it as well. And I think everybody, that's what you should do. Support original, creative, outlandish, and inspiring creators. And they are among the best. And they brought along Ego Plum, one of my favorite composers. I used to follow Ego Plum's music when I was in college.
Wow.
He was independently releasing CDs. And he wasn't, I don't even think he was scoring things at that point, but he was making music on his own, I swear, like on a 4-track cassette recorder probably back then, that was inspired by imaginary movies he would make up in his head. So I was living in Ottawa, Canada, finding out about his music through, I don't know, like weird music magazines, maybe like even in an ad in alternative press or something. And you send away for the CD, you had to mail away for it. This is, like pre-internet even. And I would get the CD and I got obsessed with it. It was very weird, kind of childlike, Elfman-esque sort of music, I guess, if there's anything you could compare it to. Oingo Boingo, Danny Elfman. Circusy, childlike music with a twist, full of fantasy, and really nothing else like it. So I became obsessed with it. And we ended up meeting him at Richard and Anastasia's on a whim. I had no idea that they were even working together. So after all these years to meet Ego Plum in person here in LA, I couldn't even believe it. So we had a great chat at one of their parties, and now he's been along kind of a partner in all their films and projects. And he's just, now he's doing just tons of SpongeBob and all these animated projects. And he's become the guy in Hollywood for animation scores and soundtracks. And yeah, he's on board for this one and all their other projects. So Bloody Bridget, Richard Elfman, follow him.
Yes.
And also, this is a great segue. Speaking of families that create, this leads into something that I wanted to talk about that I ended up seeing. Lauren, you saw part of.
Yeah.
Where the Devil Roams by our friends, the Addams Family.
Did you see that, Leo?
I have not yet.
We ended up renting it, like, I think the 2 days before it was actually on Tubi Free. So you can watch it on Tubi Free. But hey, we love supporting them. Yeah. Our friend Catskill's own, John, Zelda, Lulu, Adams, and Toby Poser. 2021's Hellbender, the film they did, was one of our movies of that year.
It was great.
So great. Talk about original. And they're back with their new one, and it's kind of a demonic family carnival road trip. And the thing, one of the things I loved about it, it was a period piece, but it's also completely set outside of time. It's supposed to take place in the 1930s, yet they've done it in a very disarming way by peppering it with modern elements, so it feels outside of time and eerie, kind of like what It Follows was able to create by misplacing things in a time to create an absence of time, if that makes any sense. So it takes place in the 30s, but there's people with body piercings and the modern primitive culture mixed into it. And you pair that with their cinematography and this bizarre and unsettling composition of shots that are incredibly unconventional. And then the soundtrack, the music is at the center of this film. And it is really at the center of this family because they are in a band together called Hellbender, and they did all the music themselves on Hellbender and on this film. And you could feel that family bond that they have together, that special creative family bond. Not only are they making music together, which is a crazy intimate thing, but they're also making these films together. They're directing it, acting in it, writing it, and you could feel it, and it feels special to experience. And I don't know, it's handspun murder folk doom metal is how I would describe this movie. Check it out now on Tubi.
Yep.
I can't wait.
Yeah, it's really great. And then, sorry to go on a tangent, everything I'm saying kind of bleeds into each other. But another thing, family. So Scarlett, Tarantine Scarlett, has been walking her way through Servant. She's become obsessed with that show. It ended at the beginning of 2023 with season 4, the final season. We have still not seen all of season 4. We are now watching season 4 with her. So we stopped, I think, at like the first couple episodes, and then things got crazy with just life, and then we fell out of it. So we're now watching season 4 from the beginning with her. It's so fun to watch stuff through her eyes, by the way.
They're very specific eyes.
Yes. We weren't even allowed to speak when she was watching. Like, we watched some last night.
We got scolded.
Oh, yeah.
She was like, if you two are going to talk, then I'm going to watch this on my own in my room.
Yeah.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah, and we're like, just commenting like, oh, wow, Dorothy Turner, there she. Shut up. Do you guys want to talk? I'm going to my room. I'm like, wow.
That's intense.
Funny. This is special.
Yeah, she is into it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really funny. Into it. But I understand. And it's now, she says it's like her favorite TV show ever made.
Yeah.
And she's big into American Horror Story.
Yeah.
Like Murder House. Like, she loved that. Now this is like her thing.
And it,
oh, yeah. I mean, this, what M. Night and his daughters put together, I mean, the cast is great, phenomenal. And not only that, unlike many, many shows, this one ends on a very, very good, thought-provoking note. So they didn't skimp out on anything. Like, they really tied the whole story together.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that. And I can't wait to experience that. And M. Night's, I know we mentioned it last time, that M. Night's got a new one on the way this year called Good Grades. And I did not know this, but he's got another daughter named Salika, and she did a lot of her own original music on Servant.
Yep.
And she ended up releasing an album called Seance this past year, and I've been checking it out, and it sounds like, you know who it sounds like, Lauren?
What?
Remember that girl Reese or Rez?
Oh, yeah,
what was it?
Yeah, yeah.
Is it Reese? Is that how you say her name?
I call her Reese. I don't know if that's right.
Yeah, she kind of came out that like nouveau jazz, like acid jazzy down tempo sort of stuff. So good, like kind of like that singer Estero, if anyone remembers that. Reese was produced by Estero's producer. So Lauren showed me Reese. I was obsessed. And Salika sounds like just like that. It's she's so good. And we missed her LA show in 2023. Guess where it was?
The Orpheum
Hotel Cafe.
Oh, damn.
What a cool place to be able to see someone like that, right?
Yeah.
I've been to the Hotel Cafe exactly one time, and I gotta say, the parking was horrible. That was scary. That was scary. Horror movies are scary. The parking at the Hotel Cafe, that's scary. There's nowhere to park around there. Amazing venue, dude, though. Intimate as hell.
I played there once with a friend of mine. She's unfortunately no longer with us, but
oh man,
Margie, Yeah, she. I was just playing lead guitar for acoustic, you know?
Yeah.
And because, you know, they put you on early if you're like just a no-name person, you know, like a not a... They put you on like at 7, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the drink. That's the after-hour drinking hour. So like the bar got full and like the bar was louder than the performance. So I'm looking at her. I'm like, I don't think anybody can hear us. And sure enough, yeah, somebody got up and told the bar, hey, guys, please, you know, it was just a weird situation.
Wow.
But, when yeah, was
never,
this?
Never went back.
When was this?
Ooh, this would have been 2005.
Oh, wow. Just before. Yeah. I think, yeah, that was the year I moved here, actually.
Wow.
I missed your show, Leo.
Between that place, it was actually a better place called Highland Grounds. It's now closed.
Okay.
The place to catch senior songwriters. And like randomly one day, John Frusciante was just there hanging out playing acoustic. And like one day, what's his name, who died from, oh my God, the band. Alex Chilton from Big Star.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, I got to chat with him. And then weirdly enough, like a month later, he was dead.
Jeez.
Wow.
But yeah, that whole singer songwriter scene is kind of, I wish these venues were still around and still supporting that, you know, like, yeah, we have the Roxy, the Whiskey and all that, but we need more of that, like, you know, laid back vibe where a lot of these big names can just show up and play, you know?
Yeah. Well, the Hotel Cafe is still around, right? I mean, this is the Salika show was back in June. You know who we ended up seeing at Hotel Cafe the one time I was there? That was actually a really cool show. Lauren, you know, you remember who that was?
Skylar Fisk.
Skylar Fisk.
And whose daughter is Skylar Fisk?
It is Sissy SpaceX.
Yeah, that's right. From Carrie. Yes. And she was there.
She was there
watching her daughters. And man, that was freaky.
Yeah, really?
That's Carrie right there.
Awesome. She looked the same.
Exactly the same.
And I was like, wow.
Legend.
That's
so
awesome.
Cool. And Skylar Fisk's music, oh my gosh, if you haven't heard it and you're listening, you gotta check it out. She's so good.
She's got such a beautiful voice.
From
I love
where
her.
I'm standing. Remember that?
Yes, I sure do.
What was that movie called again?
I don't know.
God, it's killing me. It was filmed up in Big Bear.
Yeah, it's killing me because I really want to talk about UFOs right now.
Okay, we're getting to it. I wanted to just add, what did I want to add about M. Night before? And then, yeah, Shauna, his other daughter, who did some directing stuff on... Servant, and who also did second unit on Knock at the Cabin. Her debut feature comes out, supposed to be June 7th, called The Watchers. So we're really excited about that. That said,
nice.
Moving on to UFO land. For any of you who don't care about UFOs,
I'm sorry.
Very, very sorry.
Very
That's become
sorry.
Something that everybody here is obsessed with, especially Lauren, because there was a big 3-night televised event. Right?
UFO Revolution.
Where was that playing? Was it TMZ presented it, but what?
Tubi.
Tubi, okay.
It's on Tubi, yeah.
Hell yeah, man. Tubi, bringing the fire.
Ugh, so good.
So the whole show kind of was at the centerpiece of that was Jeremy Corbell, who we've been so lucky to have had on the show. I encourage you to go back and listen to his episode. And Jeremy also did something for our daughter, which cemented in my mind the coolness of Jeremy. The way he treated our daughter was next to none. And
crazy.
I will forever, I don't know, very moved by how he treated her and the respect that he gave her and the time that he gave her. She was 13 years old at the time and did something for her school project.
Yeah,
they filmed
science
an interview.
Fair.
Yeah, yeah. It was just... The heart on this guy, he's got a heart of gold. I mean, anyone who says anything, has anything negative to say about Jeremy Corbell, no, you're wrong.
No.
You're just simply wrong.
Yeah.
He's the best. He's the best. So it was fun to watch him on this show kind of get a chance to reveal stuff that he's never revealed about the UFO mystery.
Okay, let's talk about the jellyfish UFO. That was crazy.
That was, yeah, one of those videos that he unleashed. Leo, what did you think about the jellyfish UFO?
Very weird and very scary that it's not visible to the naked eye. And not even to infrared. It's only visible to that camera it was recorded on, which was thermal, right? Thermal.
Yeah.
And they couldn't lock on it.
Yeah, and it would go like clear and then dark. It was detecting the thermal whatever pattern.
Yeah, I think the camera was adjusting.
Yeah. And I mean, this thing looked like, it literally looked like a floating jellyfish.
Yeah.
So, is that something that could go through a building? Like, is it...
like, translucent? Yeah. Like, made of, who knows? I mean, I don't know. Maybe, right?
Like, could have it hit something? Like, if it got too low?
Right.
I don't know. I think about all these questions.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone got close enough to see if it was made of like like a phantom material or what.
But then it went in the ocean.
It did. It did.
For 17 minutes.
And apparently rose out of the ocean, then shot away at an extraordinary speed. Which, you know, because you see some of these videos, you're like, oh, maybe that's balloons or...
right.
Yeah, flying trash or something. But to see something like that accelerate...
but it's like, was something inside of it? It looks so small, right? Like, I would be so claustrophobic if I was in that.
Yeah, I don't know. And I don't know. Again, I don't know about the... some of these things, I wonder if they are from outer space or we have visitors from other dimensions or whatever it is. I'm not sure that a lot of these things necessarily are piloted and that they could be of a drone type nature, like something like that almost looked like an alien kite or something.
Right.
And it was flying over. It was in Iraq at a U.S. base out there. Right. Is that the as far as I understood?
Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's actually a shared U.S. ally base.
Okay.
And that's why, like, the other countries, I'm guessing it would be, like, the U.K. and, you know, I think they were, like, shut it down, like, after a certain point, it was kind of, like, top secret, like, don't go, you know, don't go looking for it, you know?
Yeah.
So, it's not like we had 100% authority over the whole area. But whoever caught that footage, maybe it was a, we don't know what it was, if it was a drone or a helicopter or something caught that footage. And there's a lot of, it's clear. It's very clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
That's one of the clearest things I've seen. I'm like, that is so weird looking.
Leo, do you think that maybe we're not seeing all of it? Like, what if part of it could be in a different dimension, or we only have the visibility to see some of it, and that's why it looks weird, and maybe it's part of something bigger? Is that something possible?
That's a really good question, and that's and it's something we have to ask Jeremy, because at this point anything's possible.
Yeah,
but you know something interesting, I was listening to this other podcast. I can't think of the girl's name right now, but she released an episode yesterday, which was an episode with Lula Elizondo from like this past summer or something. And something new that he said, it was a question submitted by like a Patreon member or something. And it was like, are we going to be surprised to know that, you know, how can we detect these things? Like, if we put detectors like around the world? And he says, he's like, I'll tell you, he's like, I can't tell you much, but I can tell you this. We don't even need detectors all over the world to see these things. We just need one. And it is so simple that when you guys finally figure it out and it gets revealed, you're going to be like, oh my God, like, this is crazy. Like, I didn't even know that. That got me thinking.
Okay, yeah.
I'm like,
what do you think?
Is it a cell phone? Like, can our cell phones in a certain mode, like, record things that we can't see with our eyes? Or a certain filter, you know? Or
oh, kind of like From Beyond or something, like that Lovecraft thing, like the third eye, you know, some sort of thing. And they're all flying around us at all times. That's actually kind of what that jellyfish one kind of looked like.
That's crazy. Oh, God. I'm going
to
take
apparently
my
they're
phone.
Easy to see.
That's crazy.
He didn't say how, but he said everybody will be able to see it once it gets out there, how it's done. And I'm like, oh, man. Got to be something simple like a phone.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
Sense.
You know what's so funny is, like, throughout the whole three-part series, one of the things that was cleared up for me is I had no idea that Elizondo was like, he was in charge of ATIP, right? Like he was,
oh, yeah.
he was
oh, yeah.
running the nation's, you know, division of yeah. investigating UAPs.
I mean, how crazy is it that they try to like delete him? Like,
yeah,
you know, they got rid of him, but then they were like, yeah, yeah, he doesn't work here. And then he's like, ah, oh. he's like, I have signed, like, if you want to delete my emails, which is illegal, you know, I have signed letters from Senator, oh my God, what's his name from Nevada that passed away? Harry Reid. He's like, I have signed letters from him acknowledging who I am and my work and the project and the funding and all that. So he used that as leverage against the government to say, don't mess with me, don't delete me, because I'm still here. But in return, because he still has a security clearance, you know, he can't talk, you know? Like, he knows certain things, but he's trying to get certain things cleared so that he can say certain things. But a lot of things he can't say.
I am so thankful for these whistleblowers that are out there, like, risking their lives to bring truth to the American people. And that they think that it's important that everybody knows. I mean, maybe not everything, but at least the basics.
And I think that right. the three-part series is really, and again, if you're listening to this and you're like, oh my God, shut up. Yeah, shut up. So sorry. But yeah, it's just something we've been into, and like, real seriously, like, dig it up. There is definitely an element of horror to it too. It's very spooky. Yeah, it's very spooky. But
there was a part in part two that, man, it really got to me, is when they asked Jeremy, like, you know, so aren't you, like, you know, scared for your life or whatever?
Oh yeah.
And he's like, no, he's like, I'm press, I'm media, whatever. And they dug deeper into the question, and I'm like, oh shit.
Yeah, he had to stop talking. It's, like, he was like, I need a second. It was like, what?
Yeah.
So there's a story there.
Yeah, there's definitely.
I'm sure you won't talk about it.
Oh yeah. And that's what I was going to say. I was going to say that, like, a lot of people haven't, somehow they missed the Congress hearings and all that kind of stuff that's been going on the past year. And I thought this three episode arc was like a really good crash course and kind of everything that's been going on, yes, as far as the government and UFO transparency, or at least, and if you don't believe it, at least this, the discussions that actually have been going on in front of Congress, that you would just find absolutely fascinating.
It's like, I feel like the general public has no idea what's going on. Like,
it's not like really front page news in that way. You know what I mean? Or it's laughed at. Like, you know, like, oh, right.
It's
what?
Still, you know, it still gets, I tell people all the time, and they, you know, they're just like, you're crazy. And I'm like, yeah, no, I'm not.
Regardless, though, if you don't believe, like, David Grush, who was a former U.S. intelligence official who basically went before Congress and said, hey, the U.S. government's been holding non-human bodies taken from UFO crash sites, that the military has been sneaking funds to cover up UAP reversal engineering programs. People have been injured to conceal the secrets. If you don't believe that part of it, the part that is 1,000% true are these videos and what the pilots have seen in the skies is 1,000% true. The government is saying this is true. We don't know what these are. At least there's that.
I mean, the government is telling you that they do have craft and they do have biologics. That is fact, correct?
Well, that's what David Grush is saying.
Right. But
under oath, you know, that's what he's saying. And actually, to follow up on that, just a couple days ago, I just read this.
Yes.
It was this Friday. They entered, Congress went in to another confidential session with the inspector general of the intelligence community, a guy named Thomas Monheim. And this was to follow up. It was the first one that they've had to follow up on Grush's claims. And they can't talk about it, but they're suggesting that the Inspector General found some of the claims credible. That's all they're saying right now.
Here's the interesting thing that I was thinking about. How would you find his accounts credible? See, I'm thinking perhaps other whistleblowers showed up that are still actively working on those projects and said, yep, Grush is right. No bullshit. Like,
no, that's what Grush was saying that, right, in the hearings, that, hey, there's others. Like, you ask, I'm going to give you names of others, you know. So there's a lot on the line for someone to go up there and just make that up.
Yeah.
Under oath.
I think some of them showed up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, you know, so if some smart guy was out there, you know, taping the streets where they get dropped off into the doors, somebody might have caught the identities of these people, you know, walking in the building, but behind closed doors. I'm pretty sure they verified his story, and that's why all the senators are like, well, you know, we learned something, but the most important thing is that it's been verified that whatever Grush has been saying is absolutely true. So now we know he ain't messing around. Like, it's true.
Yeah.
And I would say that bill wouldn't have been overturned, and I mean, we got some things passed, but the bulk of it was not. If they didn't have anything to hide, they would disclose everything. There's obviously something that they're keeping from us. Otherwise, everything would have been passed in that bill.
Yeah, and the whole thing with that bill is those two congressmen that vetoed it.
Schumer? Was it Schumer?
No. He's the one who put it out.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
They're like no-namers that you've never heard of, like Tom.
Yeah.
Tom Mark or something, you know?
Okay.
Those two guys that vetoed it, that basically made it not pass. One of them, his district is where Wright-Patterson Air Force Base is, where a lot of alien activity has been, like, rumored to be storage space for testing and all that. So that's one of them. And then, of course, they look at his fund, like, you know, the donors that donate. And of course, he's being donated by all the big private companies, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's like, oh god, like they told him, like, dude, don't let this pass, whatever you do. And of course, he's like, yep, no problem, I'll take care of it. And
ugh, god,
you know,
money.
So two random yahoos that nobody's heard of, nobody cares about,
we're in charge.
Stopped it from happening.
Oh, god.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting how they followed Ryan Graves to the Congress hearings they were having in Mexico. The cameras were with him as they were going to that, and we got to see his reaction to when they brought out those alien corpses during the the hearing, which made news everywhere.
Yeah.
Right? And they've been trying to figure out exactly what these things are. I think, Lauren, you said recently that
they're
a bunch of scientists here, like, they're just like bones. Just random animal and human bones used to make it like a dolls, basically.
That's
they're
so
very small. Yeah. But even it was wild because Ryan Graves there, even his reaction, he was like, they wanted to interview him in front of the corpses. He's like, I'm not doing it in front of the. Like, he even knew, like, are you kidding? This isn't.
Yeah. I mean, he was there to express the importance of, you know,
safety.
Exactly.
In the skies, right? Because he's a pilot who's been seeing these things. They see them every day up there, which is crazy. And they say, you know, again, they raise the point during the special, like, are they technology from another country? And these pilots are saying these things are doing things that they've never even known were possible, like defying gravity. And that any pilot inside of that thing would be dead instantly. And that if any other country held that kind of technology, their wars would be over. They would have absolute control over everybody. So that's out the window. And also, how is it going to be American technology that's under wraps? Same thing goes. Whoever is able to do all these things, what a, like, you know?
Yeah. No, I know.
So it's that theory completely goes out the window, as far as I'm concerned.
And then they also brought up my favorite subject, which is like the different beings. Are there beings that, you know, people say they're, you know, aliens here that look exactly like us?
Yeah, that was brought up on the show, that, you know, the possibility that people have said that.
Which creeps me out the most, I would say. And then, or it could be us in the future. You know, millions, billions.
Like time travel, yeah. Basically. Coming back and checking up on things.
Or something from a different dimension. I mean, I think a lot of these are what we're seeing when they say they're here, is that they're here, but in a different dimension. Even my brain still can't wrap itself around that, but they're here with.
Yeah, that interdimensional stuff, like, I can't make any
sense
of it
myself. Leo explained it to me, and I get the, like, basics.
Because, you know, I've heard, like, Leo and other people say, oh, like, Bigfoot, you know, Sasquatch could be an interdimensional creature. Like, yeah. When people say that, I don't understand. Yeah, I can't wrap my brain around what that means. What does that mean? Leo, is there an easy way of explaining it?
It's almost like in your room, going through your room right now, every ounce, every corner of your room is the frequency of 106.7, and that's K-Rock Radio. That's rock music here in L.A.
Right.
Yeah. Or 92.3 or whatever, 92 New York, K-Rock New York, or whatever, right? All these different radio stations, right? They're all coming through at the same time in your room, but you're tuned into one of them.
Got it.
Like your TV set can only get 106.7. That's it.
Got it.
You're stuck there. But the other ones exist at the same time. So the question is, how do you jump over to 92.3 or 104.7 or, you know, because they're there.
So
you just can't jump to them.
How do they know that there are other dimensions in this one dimension?
The funny thing is, in physics, that's been like a theory forever, right? You know, string theory, 11-dimensional hyperspace and all that stuff. And we don't know what it looks like. And, you know, fun things to theorize. But I think somebody has seen something. Like, somebody has seen a portal, or the technology that gets you from here to there.
Who do you think has seen someone? Like someone in military? Like one of these people who are talking?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's some crazy stuff. So, like, technically, you know, I don't know, like throwing it out there. So if we were able to tune into, you know, 92.3 or whatever the other frequency was in this very room,
what would we see?
Bigfoot could be standing right in front of me?
Right.
That's crazy, man.
So we could be sharing the same space.
Right.
But would the room look the same? Or would we be in the woods or something?
It might be a whole different space area. Like once you switch it, you might be in clouds or woods or something, you know, like.
That is wild. So the whole fabric it's questioning the entire fabric of reality, basically.
Yes. And it's interesting because, you know, you look at a movie like, what was that movie called? Jodie Foster, Contact, right?
Yeah.
And the whole idea why, oh my God, what's his name? I can't think of his name. The Texan actor.
Matt McConaughey?
McConaughey.
Yeah.
One of the reasons why he didn't want her to go, because he's explaining to her simple relativity from Einstein. He goes, if you go and you come back, like, I'll be an old man or I'll be dead. Like 50 years would have gone by. But maybe 5 seconds in your reality just went by.
Right.
So I started thinking about if these aliens are popping in and out of our dimension and landing somewhere really, really far, right? Like, let's say they live 40 light years away, which is impossible for us to get to, right? It's super far. It would take us 40 years traveling at the speed of light to get there. And we can't even do that. So let's say they do that, right? And they pop back in. So when they were here last will not be the same as when they come back.
Wow.
Interesting.
So even if they can pop in a second, they're still traveling that great distance. And because of that, if they come back,
everything, time has advanced here.
Yeah, maybe Neanderthals or cavemen were roaming the earth. And now Now it's like, oh shit, there's humans and they're popping off bombs and riots and, you know, rock music and whatever. And then maybe another set comes tomorrow and they're like, oh shit, you know, 200 years later, you know? So it's interesting to think about that, what they're looking for or what they're observing, you know, because it's clearly we've changed, you know?
The Boo Crew will be right back.
Make sure the back door is locked, and then check the windows upstairs.
Why is this happening?
Find something! The front front and in the dining room!
I'm really scared, and I think I'm going to freak out.
Sounds like they are in the basement!
Being alone in the dark is frightening. Seeing alone in the dark is terrifying. Alone in the dark. Rated R under 17, not admitted without parent.
I was talking to someone about this and they were like, well, why would they would I the reason I don't believe is why would they want to come here? What is here for them that they would want? And
I don't know. It's a good question. But there's I mean, I think the answer is going to be with sadly, the scary reports of abduction.
Right.
The people that have been abducted and then cattle mutilations and the stuff going on at Skinwalker Ranch. I think all that stuff's going to be like the key to those answers.
So you think it's going to be like a biological surveying, studying their interest in the human race and what we're doing? Like, do you think they're from another planet, basically somewhere else in the universe, and they're coming to observe and test because of curiosity?
Yeah, they might be. Yeah, they might be. There's a bunch of theories.
Yeah.
There's even one that they're allowed to abduct humans.
I've heard that President Eisenhower.
That Valiant Thor story, which I've never heard before.
Yeah,
is a crazy story. What was it? Was it Eisenhower? Is that who it was?
I think so.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, in the '50s, right? Like 1957, maybe. I'm probably getting that wrong. But yeah,
you look at every single story of somebody missing. Like missing for good, like never found again. Every story is they went camping alone, they went hiking alone. And a lot of it's right here, like in California or in the Pacific Northwest, you know? So it seems like being alone is a target. And they get taken for whatever reason.
But I think in that, okay, so it goes that three aliens came here. They telepathically, and now this may sound crazy to you. I might sound crazy to
What are you talking about? Three aliens came here? What is this from?
The Valiant Thor story.
Yeah.
And they,
which is actually out there. It's a story. I think there's a short films movie. He was in. Valiant Thor was in American Horror Story.
Yes. Even. So he communicated to officers that he wanted to talk to the president. He went and spoke to Eisenhower and said, you know, you need to stop with this, you know, these nuclear weapons.
Yeah, it was White House security, 1957.
We want to take them. And Eisenhower was like, no, but made some agreement that they were allowed to abduct a certain amount of people as long as they return them. To us, to where they got them from. But I guess they're not being returned. They're like missing forever.
No, he didn't give him. I don't think he gave him anything.
What do you mean?
There's a really good.
You said Eisenhower, he was supposed to give him nuclear weapons or whatever.
Yeah, he said no.
Yeah, he said no.
But he said, but you can take some of our people. And abduct them as long as you return them.
Yeah, that was, apparently the deal.
Yeah. Crazy. I mean, I obviously don't know if that's true, but sounds kind of crazy.
And he said he was from Venus.
Yes, the Venusians, like that other person, Deborah something, Barian, or did you hear about that one Leo, that there was some like UFO conference, I think around the same time, and they were, someone was describing what the species from Venus look like, and they look a lot like us. They're like, they look like Nordics, like blonde people, right. And they're tall, and they were very specific in describing what a Venusian would look like. And there was a lady there that literally fit the bill of what a Venusian would look like. And people were like, are you one? And she was said, no, obviously I'm not. And she didn't want her photograph taken. And then people took photos, and she had really dark black eyes. I guess that's a thing. And her forehead, like the skull is really, she has this mark in this photograph. I don't know if it was real, but I guess she disappeared and then like no one could ever find her again. I don't know if any of this is true.
So many wild conspiracy theories and all these different possibilities, right? That surround this UFO mystery. Yeah. I wonder if we're going to get some damn answers. It seems like you hear about this dark side, right? They talk, there's always, if you follow UFO Twitter and what any of these people are saying,
there's
a dark side, apparently. Even, Tucker Carlson has been doing interviews with people. He's been getting all into it now. And Joe Rogan, of course. And there's people talk about the dark side of this, and that the government knows and is trying to protect everybody because we can't handle it.
Yep.
You know, which
I think Grudge hinted at some of that when he said that human beings were murdered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, when asked, like, they were like, by who? The government or these non-human biologics? And he's like, both.
Yeah.
So you're like, okay, well, something's not right somewhere.
Yeah.
These things are actually don't understand us, or, you know, they can murder us at will, you know.
I mean, if they have that kind of technology, I'm pretty sure they could, you know, wipe out this whole planet if they wanted to.
Yeah, it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
Unless we're all dead and living in a simulation. Who knows?
Right.
Yeah. Was it some of your friends, Lauren, were like, how would it really affect your day-to-day, though, if you knew?
Yeah.
You would still go get your Starbucks or whatever. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, the world would still operate.
Yeah. But I have a friend that was just like, so what? I could care less. Right. Like, how is this going to affect me? Like, you know?
There is a part of that that's true. Like, what, your bosses are just going to be like, you know, I won't get called. Oh, we're not doing radio anymore. That's it. Yeah. You know, like the machine still keeps turning, right? It has for years and years and years, and will likely for a long time. Knock on wood.
I hope that, you know, we continue getting more answers. I have so many questions.
Do you really want to know, though? Like, if you had the choice, if you could just keep going on and life would be life and everything would be just as it is, or you find out something that potentially changes your entire belief system from now until the end of our lives, would you rather know and be disturbed and live like maybe knowing something that you might be uncomfortable knowing? Or would you rather be oblivious to it?
That's a good question, but I think I'd want to know. I think it can handle it because, I mean, I've heard the darkest of dark theories. And they're pretty powerful and incredibly depressing. But I don't think that would change anything for me. I mean, I'm still going to go on and, like my friend said, have my, I don't have Starbucks, but, you know,
your Diet Coke.
I'm going to have my Diet Coke and, you know, go on. But I would be like, that is some crazy, like, I would probably think about it.
Yeah. I don't know if I could get something like that out of my head. Yeah. I mean, I'd love to know, you know, again, it depends on what it is, really. If it's beings from outer space, I think that's amazing. That'd be amazing to know that. If it's something that's truly dark and I could live life not knowing and it wouldn't affect me, I might choose not to be affected, you know, but not know, maybe.
And maybe, but, like, Leo, do you think that the reason we don't know, like, the government hasn't come out and said, you know, we have spacecraft, we have aliens, they're interdimensional. The reason that they're here is because it's, there's something really dark that they would have to get to. Like I feel like once you start, like, you can't stop until you tell pretty much everything, right? Like, you can't, like, I heard for Roswell, you know, they just, they would have been fine announcing that, you know, there was, it was a spacecraft that they did
announce that.
Yeah, but then they took it back.
Yeah, they took it back.
And they created this whole weather balloon bullshit.
But at first it was, we caught a flying saucer.
Yes, and that they did collect biologics, but I think there's something else that they found that they would have to tell people, and that was that in the biologics that they found a chromosome that is in us that is in them. So that opens.
Yeah, opens up a huge discussion, right?
Yeah.
It blows it up crazy if that's true, you know?
Right.
And so, that's, yeah, that's could change everything.
Right.
So, you know, you want to know?
And Leo, do you think, like, they don't want us to know? Do you think that these...
Yeah, definitely.
But then why do they keep showing up and making themselves visible? Is that, like, are they doing that on accident?
Maybe technology, our technology is catching up with, you know?
Yes.
Being able to see them more, you know?
That's happening. And they might be getting more aggressive. They might just be saying, time's up and we're going to start showing up and, you know, we want to see what's going on and, you know...
But then how could we not be curious? You know, wouldn't they know that we would be curious if all of a sudden we start seeing things that we didn't see before?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm sure they know that. I mean, that's why they keep their distance and they can hide and go invisible and disappear and go under the water and...
Right.
In a flash, be at a different point in the sky, you know, like, we can't follow that. All we could do is, you know, look at the military sensors and be like, oh, there's satellite... dot there, and there's a dot there, and there's a photo there. But yeah, we can't chase them. We can't catch up to them.
The other side of this too, I never had known this, but the UFO sightings that have been my tongue's all tied. The UFO sightings that have happened underwater from submarines and things whizzing back past the speed of sound. That's crazy. And it also makes a lot of sense that they were speculating, hey, if a UFO is going to hide and land, the best, safest place that we would never find them is in the oceans where we've only explored 5% of them. So, man, I mean, that makes perfect sense. Of course.
Yeah.
And a lot of these things are seen landing in water, which I didn't know, really. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it makes sense to me. Yep. But yeah, I don't know. It's going to be an interesting year. I think that with people like Jeremy Corbell and George Knapp, but also just watching their friendship. I love watching their friendship. It's so adorable. I don't know. I love it. You know,
the
admiration they have for each other and how Jeremy seems to have just, I don't know, lit a fire under George again. And they're both so passionate and enthusiastic, and everything that George has been spending his whole life in pursuit of is coming out in ways that have never come out before. And it's just fun to watch them enjoy that moment together and to fight that fight. I love it.
Yeah, it's really special to watch.
Yeah. So, yeah, it'll be an interesting 2024.
And there's a lot of these people, like George and Jeremy and Lou Elizondo, and, you know, they're coming forward and they're saying, well, stuff's coming your way, don't worry, you know, and people are impatient, right?
I'm impatient. You
know, like, we want
yeah.
We want answers. We want to know what this is. What's going on? We want a 23-minute video. We want to see the occupants. You know, I think what may happen. This is maybe a long shot, or maybe not. Maybe like a 60-40 or 70-30 chance. 30% chance that we might end up getting through what they're calling catastrophic disclosure or chaotic disclosure. Have you heard of that word?
Well, what's that? Explain that.
So they're saying that a bunch of people will come out at one time, and like real like whistleblowers that are actually currently working.
Oh, like currently working in these programs?
Yeah. And they're going to be like, look, I'm tired of my life being threatened, you know, or I was fired, you know, like Rush, you know, similar story. They're going to come out in droves and they're going to be like, here's the photos. This is where they're stored. This is what's going on. This is our successes with it or not. Or we know they're hostile, you know.
Right. Kind of being inspired by everybody having these conversations finally, you know.
Yeah. So catastrophic disclosure, or they also call it chaotic disclosure. Maybe something that happens, and they're saying that would be a big mess, because if it happens that way, going back to the, you know, hey, little green men, the Grays, and everybody's like, yeah, right, it's another person in a suit, that's a fake, that's not a real autopsy, you know, we might end up going back to that, where the real stuff comes out, and we think it's fake, and then we're back to square one.
Right. I know. I feel like there's got to be, and we've talked about this, that there has to be videos out there of.
Well, we know there's videos that we haven't seen for sure.
Yes.
They've all talked about that. There's stuff that even that Tim Burchett has seen that we haven't been able to see. That
right.
They're blown away by. So.
Yeah,
it does exist. It's just all classified right now. And, you know, I think, again, Jeremy released a bunch of he's releasing these things all the time. So I know this year there's probably going to be some crazy things that we're going to see.
I want to see like what a pilot looks
right.
Like.
Right. You want to see. Yeah, you're obsessed with the actual beings.
I just and like you what you said. When we were watching this, that like maybe, I think you said like the government has been trying to like prepare us because to look like what we imagine the Grays to look like. Where did we get that image?
Yeah, that's my conspiracy theory, is that we all have that image of the gray alien with the giant head and the two big black eyes. Is like, where exactly did that come from? How do we all know that image, and where did it exactly come from? Is there one particular film that started that? Like, where did that image come from? And I feel like my conspiracy theory is that that image has been kind of dripped to us slowly over years of our entertainment and our books and media, so that we won't be as shocked when we actually see these things in real life.
Right.
That's my conspiracy theory. Which is, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. I also get really scared of it too.
Yeah.
Like it scares me like on another level.
Yeah. For Lauren, it's like watching like true crime shows, I think, you know.
What?
Well, it's scary, you know, true crime is scary, but it's also interesting, you know. You're like drawn to exploring and learning about it and watching it. Obviously you can't turn away, but you also don't want to know, like it's scary.
Yeah.
It's in the kind of exists in the same place.
Yeah.
So you guys have seen the name Gary Nolan pop up, right?
It sounds familiar.
In the documentaries.
Oh, is it Richard Nolan?
No, it's Gary Nolan.
Oh, okay.
He's the professor from Stanford, the immunologist.
Oh, okay, yes.
So I'm gonna tell you a short story.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna bring it back to Gary Nolan, okay? Gary Nolan is in line to win the Nobel Prize for his work in immunology.
Oh, yes, I'm looking up a picture of him. You know exactly who this guy was. Remember?
Yeah.
He's all over.
I'm gonna tell you a short story of a personal story here. So in the mid '90s, I was working for JPL, and it's as what they call APT, academic part time, And when you get that position, you think, oh, I'm just the gopher, right? I'm just the guy who they call to get coffee and all that. And it turns out to be not true. If you work as an APT or a co-op, you're actually like part of the team. Like they actually give you stuff to do, right? So what I didn't know is that eventually after training and all that and security clearance and all that, you know, I was a part of the team that would rotate the Mars Pathfinder spacecraft. Because, you know, it takes like 7 to 9 months to get to Mars, right? And on the way, you know, the sun hits a certain part of it, so you got to rotate the spacecraft at certain points so you can cool it off, right? And you constantly do that. And the department that I worked for was called the Thermal and Propulsion Engineering Section. And my boss, you know, every day is like, all right, so when are you going to join our engineering team? Engineering team. And I go, dude, I really love biochemistry. I'm going to continue studying biochemistry. Like, I'm not going to switch over, you know? And it's like, ah, we'll win your heart over. No worries, you know? So one day he says, hey, he goes, you got to go see Andre. I'm like, who's Andre? He's like, Andre Yavrubian. He's a Russian scientist that works in the building right behind mine, right? So I worked in section 353. He was in 354. And we were in like sister sections, you know? And Andre was given a part of the Mars rock. So right around the time, July 4th, 1997, when the Mars Pathfinder landed on Mars, it's the first rover that landed on Mars. So I worked on the mission. It was exciting. Around that time, Andre was given a piece of the Martian rock. The reason why is because that rock was found in Antarctica, like 50 years ago or 40 years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying that finding that rock was kind of like looking in a field of blackness and you see a big nugget of gold just sticking out, like just sparkling. Like it was so unique, so different that they knew it wasn't from here. So upon they studied it, they thought it might have been from the moon. It turned out to be from Mars. And he had it in this glass case, you know, the ones you see where you put your arms in, these gloves, you know?
Yeah. It's like plutonium or radiation or something.
Yeah, exactly.
So there was a rock found in Antarctica that was from Mars.
Yes, because from millions of years ago, asteroids had hit Mars, blasted off pieces, ended up in orbit around the moon, around Earth, and eventually fell through our atmosphere, landed in Antarctica.
How did they find out it was actually from Mars?
Oh, because you can look at the chemical signature. Like once you start probing it, the insides, and you look at it, you're like, oh yeah, that's Martian. Because we know Martian composition without even going to Mars. We know what it's made out of because our telescopes not only look with the eye, but the radio signals, and they can beam back the composition of like helium and carbon and silicon and oxygen and what percentages and all that, you know?
That is crazy.
So Mars is very unique compared to the moon, compared to Venus, compared to, you know, every planet's different, right?
So this guy had this chunk of rock and he had it in one of those glass things where you got to put the gloves on to like touch it.
Yeah. And my boss was like basically telling me go see Andre because he wanted me to hold the rock, you know, through the gloves, you know, through the things. And I did, and it was exciting, you know. I'm like, wow, I'm holding something from, you know, millions of miles away, like from Mars. It's crazy. You know, that's been on Earth for millions of years, you know. At that time, part of his job, he worked in exobiology, astrobiology, but he's also a geochemist. He's also a geologist. Like, he had degrees up, like, he, you know what I'm saying? He's like fully packed with degrees related to geology, rocks, and formation, and planets, right? I have none of that. He's an expert in that field, right? And it was so exciting. And, of course, the conclusion was like, well, we see evidence of fossilized bacteria in the rock, and here's pictures and diagrams of the like sulfur bonds and all that, you know. Inconclusive, right? Because they weren't sure if it was deteriorated, if it was real bacteria that was fossilized.
Sure.
You know, so inconclusive. They weren't sure. That was a story in 1997, right around the time the Mars Pathfinder landed, around July 4th. So I keep on thinking, Andre Yavrubian, man. This guy had more degrees in rock science than anybody I know. And that's why NASA gave him the rock to study, you know? But he was one of many scientists, right? He was just a local one here in Pasadena that studied that rock. And to this day, I never kept in touch with him. I don't know if he's passed on by now because it's been a number of years, you know? I even doubt it. I doubt he's alive, you know? If he is, he's an old age, retired, I'm sure. But fast forward to present day. to the gentleman, Gary Nolan, right? So Gary Nolan, if you follow his story, and you follow like the likes of Diana Pasulka, who's the, she's the religious theologian and all that, who's been on multiple podcasts. She's also studying UAP, UFOs and all that. He took some of these people out to the deserts. Gary Nolan did. The deserts of, I believe, was New Mexico. And it's a secret crash site. And he wants to keep it a secret. So a lot of these people he had brought out, he like blindfolded them. It's documented in various books. I think Ross Colehart might have been documenting a part of it, of the girl Diana, you know. Anyways, they brought back samples, right, which they think is part of a crash. And Gary's studying them, right? And I'm thinking, what's wrong with that story? Like, I keep hearing Gary keeps studying, and then you know, eventually we're going to hear that, oh, the composition's not from Earth, and it's these weird, you know, isotopes and weird chemicals that we can't make here on Earth. And I'm like, why is an immunologist from Stanford, immunologist who works with cells in the human body and disease, not an expert in metals, not an expert in rocks, not an expert how you make metal compounds, you know, from different elements from the periodic table. Why is he studying this? Now, Crush has said we've had non-human biologics, right?
Yeah.
Why isn't he studying the non-human biologics? My question is, do we know that if they have human DNA or no DNA at all? Are they based on carbon? Or are they based on silicone? Or a different element to the periodic table?
Interesting.
Like, are they androids? Like, are they not even human? Like, do they just walk and act like humans, but they're not? Or are they just made out of plastic or rubber and have no soul? Have no consciousness? Have, you know, like, why is an immunologist studying rocks and metals? That's not his specialty.
Weird.
That's not his thing. Like, there's people out there that are geologists, yeah, and experts in those fields. Why aren't they studying that? Like, I want to hear them say, like when I hear somebody on the alien show say, well, it's a chemical composition on me from Earth. And I'm like, you looked it up in the machine and the computer. Like you don't know that for a fact because you're not an expert in that field. You're an expert on using X-ray crystallography to analyze it, but you're not a rock metal expert.
So what's your theory on why he'd be looking at it and not a rock expert?
There's got to be a rock metal expert looking at this. So there's got to be. But the question is, who are they?
Yeah.
Because I think he's just a facade. I think, yes, he's looking at it out of pure curiosity because he really can write a grant and get millions of dollars for new equipment. But just because he got the new equipment doesn't mean he understands how metal can make, you know, not just four bonds, but six bonds, and it bonds to boron or silicone or other, you know, like weird things, right, that we can't do here. Or let's say we can do them on Earth for a split second, but they're not stable, right? Kind of like Pablo Lazar talking about element 115, right?
Mm-hmm.
He says, if that stuff came from somewhere else, it was made somewhere where it was way more stable in that environment for whatever reasons. But here on Earth, we could only make a 10,000th of a nanomicrogram, and it has a half-life of 0.00000019 seconds. So, like, we can make it, we can detect it, and it's poof, gone. So, it's like, who are these metal experts?
Fascinating.
Like, those are the ones I want to see looking at the crash sites and the metal and the and whatever Bob Lazar played with. Like, those are the people I want to hear from. If Gary Nolan wants to continue, I want to hear from, hey, somebody must have given you some DNA to play with, some alien blood, some alien intestines or something. Like, you analyze something. Like, what are they? That's what I want to know. And yet, nobody's asking that question.
Got to get that guy in.
Yeah,
here.
We got to be like, we'll just blindside him.
Yeah.
So we want to just talk about, you know, just simple.
Your
things.
Favorite horror movie. I saw a book. I was actually at Halloween Town today, and there was a book that coincidentally had, it was like some sort of horror tour guide book.
Okay.
And it had different horror filming locations and UFO crash sites where you could visit.
Oh, that's cool.
That sounds like we should, I should now get that book.
That's so
It
fun.
Was like $25. But like, that'd be cool, right? You'd love that.
Yeah, I would.
That's cool.
It was Richard Dolan that I was thinking of, Leo, who was also, I was like, isn't his name Richard?
Yes.
Richard Dolan was on that special as well.
Yeah. And he had, he's a different guy.
Yeah, he had some interesting things to add to that conversation as well.
If you're interested in this stuff too, Jeremy Corbell's film about Bob Lazar is unbelievable. Unbelievable. Talks all about exactly what we're talking about and more. And Bob Lazar, actually, he ends up calling him in one of the episodes.
Yes.
Of UFO Revolution. And it's a really sweet conversation. And I love what Bob has to say.
Yes.
About, you know, I don't want to spoil it because it's a cool button, but
there's a random video I found online, and I might have been like one of those stories on Instagram, so I have a hard time finding it on YouTube.
Yeah, the source. Yeah.
But no, it's a short video, maybe like 5-10 minutes long.
Okay.
It's Bob Lazar where he built his Corvette. Did you see that one?
Oh, no, I've seen like little bits of footage of him building this car with like rocket fuel, right?
No, this is a different car.
He okay.
Out of hydrogen gas.
Wow.
And the guy who's videotaping, who's interviewing him, it's got to be some friend, right, or something, because, you know, they're just chatting. He opened the trunk and he, you know, showing him like a bunch of tanks of hydrogen gas, you know, like a bunch of them. The guy's like, dude, aren't you afraid you're going to blow yourself out, you know, up? And he goes, no. He goes, I figured out how to stabilize it. He's like, it's not flammable. Like, it's not going to ignite the crash or anything, because I figured out I engineered this metal compound that stabilizes the whole reaction. So don't worry about that. He goes, oh, where'd you get the metal? He goes, oh, you typically find the metal in the insides of a core nuclear reactor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and the guy's like, well, wait a minute, how'd you get yours? He goes, oh, I made mine. he goes, you made yours? He goes, yeah. He goes, I got a reactor in my backyard over here. Come over, come show you.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh,
and I'm
my
like,
God.
This guy's playing with, I mean, fire is not even the right word.
Yeah.
Like, he's like building, like, he's playing with like nuclear energy to build a new stable metal to make the hydrogen tanks in his car like not flammable. And I'm like, wow. I'm like, if there's anybody who's worked on a UFO, it's that guy.
Right?
I can't even figure out how to make the volume work on a remote. So there are people that are way more advanced than I can't even. Yeah.
All right, we're coming up on just over an hour here, so we should probably wrap it up.
I apologize if you...
This is deep UFO talk, man. Wow.
We're not into the UFO thing.
I think we had to get... So Lauren had to get it out of her system.
I did.
And then we apologize that this is how that was done.
It was building up and building up.
Well, it's great. I don't know. I have fun talking about this stuff. It's great. Leo's got these awesome stories, too.
Yes.
You know?
Next week, we'll be... back. I mean, if there's more discoveries, we will update you, but it won't be as crazy.
I do want to give you a quick Prometheus recap.
Go for it,
because I know you watched it. So did you understand the opening scene? Because honestly, a lot of people did not, and then it's totally fine.
I think I did. I looked it up after because I wanted to make sure that I understood exactly what it meant. And it goes along with a lot of theories that I've heard that I've been going down the rabbit hole on. And
right.
Man, I got to see Alien Prometheus.
And it's so good.
Dude, and then the whole thing with like her giving birth and then her.
I don't want to ruin it for Trevor. Yeah. Who's like, what?
And then notice the date at the end of the movie. They mentioned the date.
Okay, we'll watch it, babe. Right?
Yeah, I'm just looking it up right now to say, oh, Noomi Rapace is in it. That's amazing.
Noomi Rapace.
She's amazing. Charlize Theron is in it.
It's so
Holy yeah, Michael Fassbender. Wow.
No, it's great, dude. It's one of my favorites because what happens in that movie, I swear, I think we're living through it. I think part of that might be our reality.
Jeez. Man, I'm interested in seeing that. I can't believe I snoozed on so many of the Alien movies.
Yeah.
Like after the first couple and just like, you know, I loved them, but I, missed the sequels. What was the Winona Ryder one? What was that? That was good. Was that three?
Oh, the third one, yeah.
That was good. I loved that one.
Third or fourth.
I think that was, Alien 3 was not Winona Ryder.
So it's four.
It must have been four. Yeah, Winona Ryder. Brad Dourif's in it, too. Yeah, directed by Jean-Pierre Jeunet. Written by Joss Whedon.
Oh, some Buffy. Yep.
Which we've also been watching. Little Buffy.
Little Buffy on the side.
And also, pay attention to the paintings. Like, you're going to come across some paintings in Prometheus.
Oh, yeah.
And they're going to be like, whoa.
Oh, wow.
There's one that stands out.
All right.
Don't look
Alien Prometheus. Okay, well, you know what? I'll watch that.
And then
let's try and watch that this week.
Okay, yeah.
But you've seen it already.
Yeah.
Oh, you can deal with it if I watch it again.
Yeah.
Will Scarlett approve of us watching this? I don't know if it'll go with her servant plans. We're on a very strict schedule with her.
Yeah, but
it's a terror team.
She has school, so she's not gonna be able to watch shit.
Yeah, late night, yeah.
This would be a weeknight.
Yeah, it would have to be a weeknight thing. That was your Boot Crew Podcast, episode 412. Thank you for being part of it. Production tracks provided by the great folks at Power Man 5000. On behalf of myself, Lauren and Leo, it is the Boot Crew saying...
Sweet screams.
That's right.